Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to see you all. It's good to have Russ and Diana back with us. If you're visiting with us, we hope you have enjoyed yourself so far. You've been edified and uplifted. If you have any questions about what we say or do here, please do not hesitate to ask. Our only aim is to please God and do what He wants. And so we strive to have a book, chapter, and verse for every practice or a biblical explanation for what we do here. If you open your Bibles this morning and put a bookmark in Hebrews, the 11th chapter. Hebrews chapter 11. Put a bookmark there, and then we'll be starting in Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7, starting in the 24th verse. Jesus says here, "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and acts upon them may be compared to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and slammed against that house. And yet it did not fall, for it had been founded on the rock. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not act on them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and slammed against that house, and it fell, and great was its fall." I would submit to you that Jesus here is talking about faith and what we can do with it and what we're going to do about it. You have the individual who hears what Jesus says and actually acts upon the word, and he is likened to the person who actually made plans and built his house upon a secure foundation. So when the troubles of life came, the storms, the winds, the earthquakes, the house stood. And then there's the other person who, they heard the words, they did not take precautions, they did not build upon the foundation. So when the storms of life came, they were taken away with it. One faith, I would say, is biblical. The other faith is a feel-good pat on the back. I believe, I know, but that other stuff is for super Christians. Christians that go above and beyond. I don't have to do that, or I don't need to do what the Bible says to be in right relationship with God. I believe, and that's enough. I don't have to pursue righteousness. That's just a superficial pat on the back. I want to talk this morning, getting into the 11th chapter of Hebrews now, a fuller explanation, an examination of what is biblical faith, what is saving faith. So we'll go into Hebrews chapter 11 now. We'll be spending pretty much our entire time in this chapter now. I want to start in verse 32. We're going to do this a little bit backwards. The Hebrew writer starts off in verse 32 and he says, "What more shall I say? For time would fail me if I told of Gideon, of Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David and Samuel and the prophets, who by faith conquered kingdoms, performed acts of righteousness, obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, from weakness were made strong, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight, women received back their dead by resurrection, and others were tortured, not accepting their release, so they might obtain a better resurrection. And others experienced mockings and scourgings, yes, also chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, they were tempted, they were put to death with the sword, they went about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, ill-treated." Now make note of this next line. "Men of whom the world was not worthy." Men of whom the world was not worthy. That's quite a list there. He goes into more detail in the beginning of the chapter, and make no mistake, we will be looking at the whole chapter. But just in this few short verses, he names off a whole list of characters, and the Hebrew writer is saying, I don't have time to go into all these in detail. Time would run out if I were. But all these men, by their faith, were proving the world was not worthy to even have them among them. And it's interesting, the one thing that they all listed, the one thing that they all had was that faith. A great faith. The text says so. Now, however, the question is left to us is what kind of faith was it? But the trap we fall into is we look at the patriarchs, we look at David, we look at the judges, Daniel, Jeremiah, all the prophets. And we begin to make excuse. Well, they were chosen of God. Of course they had great faith. Well, they're a prophet. That's part of the job. I would submit to you Jonah, of somebody who perhaps did not have the strongest faith when he was called of God, because he ran away from God. But we start thinking that these are some sort of superhumans, that they were just born with innate faith within them, but they were humans just like you and I. They had kinfolk just like you and I. When you pierced them, they bled, they laughed, they cried, they got hungry, they got tired. When they got old, their arthritis started bothering them. I imagine that some even suffered heartburn. They were humans, just like you and I. And so what that means is whatever faith they had is not out of reach for us, but is obtainable and actually the standard by which we should be measuring up to. And make no mistake, it was a great faith. But you and I can have that same great faith. Secondly, another point I want to consider is just how the Bible speaks about faith. Now, going to the beginning of the chapter, verse 1. I love Hebrews chapter 11 because I don't need to go much anywhere else to talk about faith and get the definitions and see how the Bible speaks about it because it's all contained in one chapter. That first verse there, it gives us the definition. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction or evidence of things not seen. Brother Haley made the point that faith comes based on testimony or is produced because of testimony. And testimony rests upon fact. You and I, or all of us here, have a mutual faith or belief in Jesus. We just woke up one day and had that faith. Either somebody instilled it in us thanks to the testimony of the Gospels or because of the testimony of the Scriptures, we came to that faith. But we do not see Him, you and I, unless somebody's lying about their age, were not there when He preached, when He taught, when He was crucified, and when He was risen. None of us were there. Yet we believe it. Because we have the testimony of the eyewitnesses, which the testimony is, they're testifying about facts they saw. A secular example. Now, I think I'm pretty safe to say this because Hugh is in San Angelo. None of us here have been to China. Okay. That's not, if you have been to China, just indulge me. None of us here have been to China. And yet, every time I go to Walmart and pick up an item, I see all the evidence around me that China exists. I can read about China in books. I know there's the Chinese language. I keep hearing about China coming after our debt. All this evidence around me is there. And I have no reason to doubt that China exists. But I've never been to China. I've never seen the people. I've never walked the paths. But I have the evidence of a thing not seen. And I have the conviction that it exists. It's right there in Asia. I mean, I could use the same example for New York or any other state that I haven't been to. I've only been to 5 states. How do I know Nevada really exists? What's the evidence? I hope you're seeing the point. I have the belief that these things exist because I have the testimony of other people who have seen it and who have been there. In fact, Hugh testifies about his experience in China all the time. But I hope you're seeing that faith is the result of testimony which is based on fact. We also understand from this text that the faith that is being talked about is non-negotiable. Let's read on. By faith, we understand that the worlds were prepared by the Word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of things which are visible. By faith, Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained the testimony that he was righteous, God testifying about his gifts, and through faith, though he is dead, he still speaks. By faith, Enoch was taken up that he would not see death, and he was not found because God took him up. And he obtained the witness that before him, his being taken up, that he was pleasing to God. And without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who seek him. It's non-negotiable. Faith is the prerequisite for everything. If you don't have faith, you don't have much else. But faith is not just that mental assent, that mental agreement. Many of my college classes, I sat there and I could see the point the professors were making. Or my geology class, I understood the concepts. I had belief in the concepts. I understood them. I didn't act upon them, and well, there was a midterm that was not so great. I didn't take the information and used it. Look with me in James chapter 2 for a moment. In James chapter 2, looking at verse 14 to begin with. He says, what use is it then, my brethren, if someone says he has faith, but he has no works? Can that faith save him? What James is asking the question is if somebody says they're a believer, but they're not acting upon that belief, he's asking the rhetorical question, can that really save a person? Well, the obvious answer is no. They're disagreeing with the point. They're not acting upon it. And James gives an example in the next few verses here. If a brother or sister is without clothing or in need of food, and the one of you says to them, go in peace, be warmed and be filled, and yet you have not given them what is necessary for their body, what use is that? Even so, faith, if it has no works, is dead being by itself. And James uses the word works there, but I think the point should be made that that works is just acting, is living out your faith. Living out your faith and doing what is commanded. Going to James chapter, looking down further a little bit, pardon, we already read that. It's a dead faith. Looking back in Hebrews then, we see another example here. I want to touch on some others. We're jumping around the chapter a little bit, I understand it, but looking at verse 30 of Hebrews chapter 11. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they'd been encircled for 7 days. And by faith, Rahab the harlot did not perish along with those who were disobedient after she had welcomed the spies in peace. These are two examples that illustrate the point. Because those were strange instructions the children of Israel received about Jericho. You were to march around the city 7 times, no siege equipment, in complete silence. And on the 7th day, 7 times, Complete silence except for the last one. The completion of the last one, you are to shout. Those are strange instructions. All the evidence to date would have told him that's not going to work. To take a city like Jericho, you need siege equipment. You need large armies. You need battering rams and ladders. You need all of it. How is walking around in a circle going to do anything? But consider where they have been previous to this. God had delivered them from Egypt. They had seen the parting of the Red Sea. They had seen Pharaoh's army destroyed. They had been fed with the manna in the wilderness. They had heard the thunder of God's voice. They had all the evidence to see, all the evidence previously to have the full conviction if God says this is what's going to take the city, it's going to take the city. So that's why the Hebrew writer can say by faith they did this, the walls of Jericho fell. Same thing with Rahab the harlot. All she had heard was about what God had done for these Israelites in Egypt, how he destroyed the armies, and her response to Joshua was, "We have heard what your God has done. Surely this city is delivered into his hands." She had not seen those acts. She had not seen the event. The only evidence she had that it happened was these two spies in front of her. And yet, she had all the evidence she needed to act upon it. And because of that, she was spared. I've jumped around a bit because the two focal points of this chapter are Abraham and Moses. I want to spend the remaining time together looking at them and expounding more on these points. So starting in verse 8 of Hebrews chapter 11. By faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking for a city which has no foundations, whose architect and builder is God. And by faith, even Sarah herself received the ability to conceive, even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, there was born even of one man, and him as good as dead, at that, as many descendants as the stars of heaven in number, and innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. I want you to notice a few things. Verse 8, he obeyed and went out. Verse 9, he continued in obedience and lived as an alien in that foreign land. He didn't just have the mental agreement. Sure, he had the belief. But that belief was the prerequisite for his action. He believed God and acted upon that. And you notice that the acts of testing, or the testing of faith, starts out very small, relatively speaking. Go to this land. All right, now live in an alien in this land. When Lot was captured, he went and rescued him. There was other acts that led up to actually probably the hardest test of faith that we would ever have to face, is that is offering up his only son. Looking at verse 17, by faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, "In Isaac your descendants shall be called." He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received them back as a type. By faith, and he gives the example of Isaac there, but backing up, I would submit to you that Isaac's birth was further evidence for Abraham to offer up Isaac. Going back to that text again about Sarah. Verse 12. Therefore, there was born even of one man, and him as good as dead. God brought life from death. Abraham and Sarah were far beyond childbearing years, way beyond childbearing years. Good is dead. One could say that they were just in the waiting room, if I can use that illustration. And God was able to bring life from death, life from nothing. And so I would submit to you that yes, considering God's previous faithfulness, that's included. But when he gets that command to offer up your only son, and Abraham, I'm not saying it would have been easy. But he considered, if God can give me a son, though me and my wife are far beyond the years and as good as dead, he can bring him back. Yeah, that, and also he had the promise. He knew that God was faithful. He had no reason to doubt God's faithfulness to this point. And so he knows that the promise was based upon Isaac. Isaac was part of the promise, and since God is faithful to his word, that is another evidence for his faith. And again, I don't know how he was able to have the strength to do it. That's a question I would like to ask one day. But he did it, and God spared him. But if you notice all these things, there's a recurring theme. By faith, he obeyed. By faith, he went out. By faith, he offered up Isaac. Based on his conviction, he acted. And then we have Moses. The two great characters of the Hebrew religion. The two men, if any of them who could have claimed salvation by works, which as Paul would make in later writings, they couldn't. They all had their faults. But these are the all-stars. And the Hebrew writer holds them up as examples for us and these Christians of the Hebrew letter. A faith to emulate. I want to cover the whole text, so we're going to read a little bit. Verse 20. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau, and even regarding the things to come. By faith, Jacob, as he was dying, blessed each one of his sons of Joseph and worshipped leaning on the top of his staff. By faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the exodus of the sons of Israel and gave orders concerning his bones. Joseph had a faith the whole way through. Horrible life. Betrayed by your own brothers. Thrown into a pit. Your brothers lied about your death to your father. And yet, if you look at the end of Genesis, when all things are mended, they've come back, they finally confessed what they've done. Years later, he says, you meant it for evil. God meant it for good. It's because through his whole life at that point, God had given him dreams and the ability to the interpretation of dreams, and he knew what was coming. He was able to go from the jail to be in Pharaoh's household and eventually put all over Egypt next to Pharaoh. Was it because he was a deal maker? He was good at negotiation. He was faithful to God and acted upon that faith. And so now, he had all the evidence to see that he knew the Exodus was coming. And this is some 4 centuries before it happens. If memory serves me correctly. Long before it ever happens. And yet, he tells his children about it, saying it will happen one day. And then we skip to that one day with Moses. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents. But as they saw he was beautiful, a beautiful child, and was not afraid of the king's edict. Now I know verse 23 says, by faith Moses, but I would suggest to you that verse 23 should read, by faith Moses' parents. Because the act of faith in this verse is his parents. They understood, they weren't going to kill their only son. They had known the God that their families had served previously. And I would submit to you that based upon Moses' upbringing with his mother as his own wet nurse, that this was a God-fearing family. And so not fearing the king's edict, they hid their child. Not only did they hid the child, but by faith, even though they were strangers in a foreign land, his mother raised him up, knowing God, even in Pharaoh's household. That is the awesome responsibility and great privilege God has given to parents, to train up the youth to fear God and love Him, to fill in the gap to become future elders and deacons and members and teachers, to continue on the work. This is what Moses' parents did. Despite all the circumstances around them, perhaps preventing that. Verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. Considering the reproach of Christ, greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, he was looking to the reward. By faith he left Egypt, not fearing for the wrath of the king, for he endured, as seeing him who is unseen. By faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, so that he who destroyed the firstborn would not touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as though they were passing through dry land. And the Egyptians, when they attempted it, were drowned. There's so much to talk about there and so little time. But you look at all those great examples there. You look at what they all did. It's strange commands here, because it's the first time some of these are being commanded. The Passover. They had seen the previous plagues. They knew God was capable of doing this, and now they're saying that the firstborn child is going to be killed unless they sacrifice some sheep and take that blood and mark their doorways. Again, everything they're used to hearing would say, how is that going to save my firstborn? How is blood over the doorway going to save my kid? But again, they saw what God had done previously, and they knew if God has commanded it, it's going to happen. So they acted. They did it. It was the Hebrew children who were saved. And here, another test of faith is crossing that Red Sea. Yes, I just saw it open up. I see the dry land, but there's still several feet of water on each side. Nothing holding it up. It could collapse at any moment. But they went through. Again, previously, and you're noticing the theme, I hope, already. They had seen what God had done, and they acted upon it. Bringing this to a close now, I want to also suggest that there's one thing that they all had in common besides faith, and that is they were looking to the promises yet to come. In the 13th verse of the same chapter through verse 16, all these died in faith without receiving the promises. Abraham did not get to see his descendants as numerous as the stars. Abraham did not get to see, through you all the nations shall be blessed. Joseph did not get to see the Exodus. Moses did not get to enter the land of promise. All of them did not get to receive or see the promises fulfilled. But, continue on, they, having seen them and welcomed them from a distance, and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on this earth. For those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. And indeed, they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had an opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared a city for them. They just didn't focus on the immediate promises, the immediate situation. Their faith looked beyond the immediate circumstances. Their faith was looking to that time. They knew there was something more than what was just here in the moment. Joseph looked beyond several centuries to the Exodus, and I'm of the opinion even further beyond. Moses on Mount Sinai says he was up there for 40 days. Yes, he gave him the law, but if we believe the biblical writers that he wrote the Pentateuch, God also gave him imagery and vision of what happened at the beginning so he could write Genesis. And who knows what else God was talking to him about. But all these individuals believed God and considered him faithful. And so God counted them as righteous. And they all looked for that country because the writer makes a point. If they were just looking to go back home, there was nothing stopping them. They could have. They would have had ample opportunity to go back. Abraham could have gone back to Ur at any time. Joseph could have just said, well, I'm done with Egypt. I'm going to go back to Canaan. But they weren't looking forward to that physical home. They were looking beyond to that which is better. They all had a saving faith. They all gained approval through their faith. Going back to the beginning of the chapter, by faith, verse 7, Noah, having been warned by God about things not yet seen, in reverence prepared an ark for the salvation of his household. I would ask you, just consider for a moment, if Noah believed God, what he said, oh yes, there's devastation coming, but did not build the ark, would we be here today? Now I know God is capable and he could have restarted it if Noah refused to obey. And this is all what ifs. But if Noah had not obeyed, his family would not have been saved. Perhaps he would have gone on to his other sons. But continue on the what ifs. If none of them obeyed God, they were not saved. It didn't matter that they believed what he said. You have to act upon it. So I ask you the question this morning. Are you going to obey God today? If you're already a Christian, are you doing diligently to continue to crucify the flesh and live righteously? Are you faithfully trying to live by His commandments? To build one another up. In fact, if you go back just one chapter in Hebrews 10, I only bring it up because we're here in the same book. Verse 24, and let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking our own assembling together as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another all the more as you see the day drawing near. Are we doing that? And I'm not going to harp on verse 25. You all know what verse 25 means. I'm going to give you the reason for verse 25, 24. Who have you given thought about recently to stimulate the love and good deeds? Who have you built up recently? Who have you made an effort for? When was the last person you talked to about the gospel? Last person you invited to church? Last time you sat down and you read a book in one sitting so you can get the full picture and not worry about what does this word mean or well, what's the application of this? Those have time and place, but when have you just read the gospel narrative so you can get the whole picture? There's a huge list. But how are you obeying God? How are you acting upon your faith? I would ask that, think about, meditate upon that question this week. Now, if you're not in Jesus, there's really only one way you can act upon your faith, and that's obeying Him and submitting to His will, becoming one with Him for salvation. If you want, turn with me to Mark chapter 16. Jesus, given the Great Commission, tells the apostles there to go and preach. He says there in verse 15, go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. He who has believed and has been baptized shall be saved, but he who has disbelieved shall be condemned. Jesus does not make it complicated. There are no works you perform to earn salvation. There are only acts of faith. Do you believe God and what He said? Well, act upon it this morning before it's eternally too late. Come forward as care we stand and sing the song of invitation. All right.